Now this town run over. This town run over, and I'm setting up for Ms. Chitty. I'm setting up for Ms. Chitty for this afternoon. This is, what is this? This is Friday the 13th of August, 1971. Town run over, and I'm setting it up for Ms. Chitty this Friday afternoon, the 13th of August, 1971. Faye just talked over the phone. She's sitting in the fan and watching television, and she's interested in Betty Ann riding that horse. This is Channel 1 over. This is Channel 1 over, and I'm setting up for Miss Chitty this Friday afternoon, 13th of August, 1971, if she gets here.
Take our
pictures in. Well, who do I hear?
Well, who do I hear? Well, we got somebody come to see us.
And that's an old bag of skin and bones.
Don't tell me that.
Oh, goodness.
I think they ain't no strength to a I'm going to cook a steak after a while. And
get down there and catch breath.
What's that?
Drink of water.
Don't you?
Oh, she.
You need something to cook. Oh, you got something. You brought something.
Yes, ma'am.
Why, see?
You want any ice in it or just you want it in the bottle?
Is it still cold?
Mm-hmm. You still got it.
Tried to buy ice juice, yes. And she said no, she wanted Pepsi. Under its mouth, that would be.
Yeah, you got it. You just take a choice. You know, this air, this is nice today. Gee whiz. Sunday when we were sitting in here, just as hot as fire, wasn't it?
Yes, sir. There.
And I'll put a couple of them over here.
Well, I was afraid you wouldn't get here in time to help me get my cows up. I've got, you tell Frankie. He don't know what trouble is. My cows have had to wade way out in that old muck to get to the water. It's gone back so far.
Yes.
And they getting a sore foot. And they just hobble around.
You mean it's a sore foot, a moccasin bite?
No, it's right on the foot. You can see. Right in between the hoof.
Well, I never heard of cows getting so feet.
Well, I'm glad you haven't because...
I know I was having. Now, I don't know what they've been having up on the parade back up there where Frankie's been working.
Yeah.
Frankie's got... He catches up with Mr. Albert. And Mr. Albert's that right, you know, the man he works for. And the Jeanette don't grab him before that comes to the front. He goes there, whatever bit he can make. He's sure gonna need it now. I just told Ms. Miles coming over. I said, well, Ms. Frankie got that car now. That's over $1,000. And 1700 and something, I think.
Goodness.
And then he's still on a winter feed bill down at Seminole, 100 and something. And his television, he just about got the little, like it was 100 and something. Maybe he's got that little bit of something just about paid up. Well, there's that. Like I told her, the house needs repairing and everything. Shoot, if I get it repaired, I go on like I've been going.
You know, that's a good house, but they all fall apart, see? They all constantly got to have some attention. What does yours need, Miss Chitty?
Need center seal put on it. Should have been put on it when it was made, built.
Oh.
And the man that helped him build it, says, "Oh, now, Mr. Frank," says, "we just leave that center seal and we'll put that in some other time." Now, the blocks laid that going to that center seal. Blocks, some of them are maybe, you know, back door steps and other places around that. But it never got under that.
I'll be darned. You know,
you all want some of mine?
You know,
no, I'm going to have
one. I've got one in here.
Yeah, I've got coffee. I'm going to have something in there. You go ahead.
I've got, you know, let me tell you the truth. When you don't go ahead and do something,
you see,
at the
that's
time,
old framework. It ain't put up there just so. That there brick siding, that's the imitation of bricks, you know. It's got board walled on the outside of it. Put that too. And we taken the old house and part of one of the old barns we tore down. And made us a house out of it. The house that we were living in and one of the old barns part of it. Made us a house. We thought, well, that living room, the reason it looked so big and old, it was two rooms at one time.
Oh,
I see.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of a hall-like room, you know.
Yes.
Didn't have no window in it, just had the door to come in and had the door going in through. And at that time when Daddy was living, it was the dining room, which is my bedroom now.
Right at the end of that long room?
Yes, we slept in the, we call it the fire room, fireplace room, you know. That was our room when he was there. Well, the boys, they wanted to go hunting in the wintertime. And I didn't feel like laying up there in the bed, maybe drop off sleep, and you'd hear me snoring, and they're talking and all. And you know how a bunch of men and boys are when they get together, they don't care what to say and how many dirty tales it tells. So I told the boys, I said, "I'm going to move my bed." Frankie says, "Where are you going to move to, Mom?" I said, "I'm going to take the dining room now as a bedroom. Use this for a dining room." Well, we used it for a dining room a long time. But it was so small to get around that big old table we've got. Of course, we had that big bench out on the front porch. Put it in between the wall and the table. And three could sit on that easy and eat. One could gin, three of them on that side. But they got fussing about it being so hard to get in here and yonder and there and the other. I says, "Well, what you going to do about it?" You can't remedy to getting in and out as well as I did mine. I just simply taking the dining room from my bed and that the kitchen on this side. Here's kitchen, here's dining room now,
mm-hmm.
Which was our bedroom. But here was the living room. And here's the other bedroom over here. Well, that was the dining room at that time Frank was living. And Frankie's room was back here on the end of the dining room.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And the stairway. Oh, the top's falling out of the ceiling. That old sheetrock, when it starts to breaking and falling, I'm telling you, it's a mess.
Oh, it is a mess.
In the kitchen one day, I don't know what I got through cleaning up the breakfast dishes and was going to get busy putting my dinner on, you know.
Uh-huh.
I turned, went outside and come back in. I heard something fall in the house, some big rumbling, you know. And a piece of sheetrock had fell from up here over the stove, over the back door, right across the stove.
Wow.
Now what am I going to do? Margaret and them were still living in their old house, you know. Margaret said she heard the noise, said,
uh-huh.
But she knew it couldn't be me because she'd seen me out in the yard.
Yeah.
Well, she come on down there, and me and her together, pulled it off, folded outside and stood on the back porch to find the position come in. Plastering between there's two parts of it.
Uh-huh.
One side's whiter than the other, and
yeah.
You turn the white side down and the brown side up. And it's kind of a putty, not a putty, but a, well, I'd say the black, the brown piece, about the color of that curtain there, when they're new,
mm-hmm.
was put down to make it, you know. And then they put all this here, smeared this putty stuff, what do you call it, cement or something, got that thick in that on. Then they take the white sheet, put on top of that. And I guess that's the way they down. I just found it out myself because the examiners pieces that were falling around. I'm going to try to show that little cough.
Well, if you didn't have that, you'd have something else, but you might as well take what you got.
And keep it, eh?
Yeah. You know, I like that.
It wouldn't do to swap with anybody for something else, because it's joking.
Yeah,
it is.
Oh, Lord.
What was that you was telling me about when you all used to go for a ride along that road with and your husband and the boys would say what? What did they say about the stomach?
And that, roller coaster
yeah.
Road over there, the boys and Margaret said, ooh, that don't go so fast. It makes my stomach want to come up. up one. Yeah.
That was roly country around there.
Yeah.
And it's worse than that down south, down there.
Yeah.
Between a Popkin Grove.
They used to follow them hills. Now they cut them off. Makes a big difference, don't it?
Yes. I reckon they found out about as cheap work one way it was another. Takes too much gas to go with these if you got no raggedy car anyway. There's no raggedy car that can't hardly make it over just a little mold here much of these big cars.
Yeah. They're all big and powerful now, aren't they?
Yes, sir. He made the little molehills bigger than what they were.
Yeah. You know, I like that chimney you got in your front room there. It's way up there, and it's got a mantle on it.
No, sir, no, did get a mantle put on it.
Well, what was it? What did I think it had a mantle, Faye? Didn't I see things up there?
You seen calendars hanging up over the fireplace.
Oh, is that it? Oh, I see.
Ooh, if it had a mantle on it, I'm telling you, I'm sure it'd be broke down into little whatnots and first one thing and another. And if Frankie taking the notion, had his hammer and his pliers in his hand, she taking the notion, said, oh. Come in, lay things down on the dining table. And if I move,
yeah.
What's going with so and so? And I told you not to put that to begin with.
Frankie. I'm about to sneeze. Frankie hangs his hat up there on the mantle.
No, it's just above there.
I mean, on the fireplace.
His window, his fireplace, he hangs his hat up yonder.
Well, you know, he hangs it up there where it'll be out of the way.
And you know some old deer horns he's got over there on the door? He found them up there in Mr. Zetrice's pasture. Brought them home, cleaned them up, and had them fixed up there to hang his hats and caps on. We can't keep it up there, this one coming in, that one, the other. Flop, flop, flop. And here it'll come keeling over. Finally got it tied to the wall, to the door facing with a string and a piece of tape, and I think you got a, I don't know, it might have been a long finishing nail put up there. You got it tied to that. Poor thing, he has a time with his relics.
What can he do with that old plasterboard in there, Miss Chitty, to make that thing stuff stay up? Once it starts coming down, it's awful hard to stop it.
Yes, sir, it is. I tell you what I do, if I can get to it, or did do, I won't do it now, not for a while, you know. I'd take and get me some nails and a strip.
Oh, yes.
And I'd nail it back up there.
Oh, I see.
Maybe what caused the bed in his room? His room started leaking. And leaked up, had his bed setting this way, east and west. I got leaking so bad, couldn't keep it there, moved it around, then it got leaking, still leaking east and west, but had to move it from there, got over in this corner. That's my room. And now, I don't know, it couldn't be that it's been so much rain that caused it to, where the sections is put together, they never did strip it like that as yonder.
Yeah.
We didn't strip it with the, you know, they have a wide tape about like that.
Yeah.
That they strip over the seams, they call. Or didn't get in his room with it, I don't think. Boy, we had time.
Oh, you did?
That's one reason my old table don't stand up any better than it does now. They use it to stand on to do their nailing.
Oh, yes. With that big old heavy feet.
Yes, and you've seen Harry Smoke, haven't you? There's that house right across from H.J. Geiger's store down that thing,
yes.
Johnson's store.
Yeah.
And he was a big man then. He's been sick quite a bit here since his wife died, and all of his children are married. Well, they were all married off when the mother died. But I guess his cooking ain't too good for
him. He back now?
Yes. Sometimes he'll go visiting and stay with some of his. Oh, they're all right. I don't know where Evelyn is. But Esther and George, he's up in Gainesville. And Esther and her family back this way from Shiloh Church. And I don't know where Evelyn is. She's somewhere around there. I guess she's still in Marion County somewhere.
Well, that's your children.
That was Henry's, Harry's children.
Harry's,
yes. And you talk about a woman being a worker. That woman worked her house and worked in the field, too. And kept them youngins in school till every one of them graduated.
Oh, that Reddick. Yeah.
They all graduated in the old high school at Reddick, in the little city of Reddick. Mm-hmm. They didn't live long enough to say anything. Say, well, I started in that school. No, I started in them little houses over there. And then moved me from the old to the big school.
Mm-hmm.
And just barely got upstairs in the big school and high school before I was going to put them all over at Spar, Anthony, what is it called? I don't know. It's Reddick. Reddick High School, but just over to. And then she went one year to Wellston to school.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes, sir. Ike Mixon's wife daughter was living out there on their place. That, out there in the mixing settlement. Mm-hmm. And she had two. Yeah, she had two going to school. So she'd come by and pick Betty and up. Karen put her out of, Karen put her over at schoolhouse. And she'd go on where she was going. Well, if she come back home, or go home, do what she's going to do there. Then she'd go and pick up the school kids. She done that off and on for 9 months. Sometimes Ike's wife would, her, this girl's mother would bring them out, probably spend the weekend. But she never did.
Is Frankie a pretty good carpenter?
Well, he ain't too much of a carpenter, but he can put things together.
Well, he's about like me, isn't it?
If it needs nailing, or more nailing, he'll put nails and nails in it.
Yeah. Well, I learned a long time ago I can work on things out there for the cows. And put stuff up, you see, and make it stay pretty well. But if I come indoors in here to work, it don't look, it's noticeable.
Well, Frankie'd say, well, now, why does he want me to do so and so in that for? Because, don't you know, I ain't no carpenter like Willie.
Oh, Willie's the carpenter.
Willie, Martin. Well, all of them can do as they have to do with. Mm-hmm. Now, Martin, he builds his own houses, you know, up then, rents them out. Or did. Till it got, things got so hard and tight on them, till went up, you know, prices of material, and of course, him being a builder, he could get it cheaper. Then Frankie could go in there and buy stuff for a home.
Yeah.
Now Martin, tell him, now I want this stuff, I'm going to build another home. He could bring stuff out there and build us a house, I reckon. But gosh, who's going to pay him for all them trips he makes and all them days he makes and all that heavy and that stuff?
Yeah, he's high and, priced too.
And he rents them out. He's got. And he sold some of them. The first house he built, you all know where the Tung Oil plant is over there, close to the cemetery and railroad?
Yeah.
Well, he had a house, this is one house here, and he had the next house. And he painted it purple, kind of a purple light, you know. And he got it paid for, working and helping and doing and working on other houses that they were going to sell. Him, Mr. Smith, Ezra, you may know him, I don't know, Ezra Smith, went in business together, you know. And they built several houses. They built Ezra a house right up, I think, here on the corner. Martin was back there. I don't know how many is built back in there now since Martin sold his. Oh, he had a right good little piece of land in there. I don't know whether he built houses on, sold a lot, or whether he sold a lot, or how, but anyway, he got that place paid for by him and Smith working together. And of course, they. Finally, one went one way and one went the other. I don't think it'd get along too good. I think Smith wanted to be boss man over everything.
Yeah.
And Martin wanted to be some boss, too.
You know, Miss Jenny, I used to think these people who were partners for a while and then they broke up, I thought, well, now that's mighty bad. Well, I take a different view of it now. I wonder now that it lasts as long as it does.
Mm-hmm. I was surprised that Mark stayed in with him as long as he was.
They don't need to work together the whole
life.
But it used, when I was growing up, it would bother me.
When the children get enough of anything, they're tired of it.
Oh.
Yeah.
Quit it.
Yeah.
Mr. Smith was wanting to be a little more bossy on Martin's side of the business, trying to tell Martin what to do.
Yeah.
So they finally divided up the works, and Martin got out, back out from the, I think they, that was west, north, or but he's put up quite a few bungalows, you know. Well, and he'd sell one, maybe he'd sell two, get rent out of them, or he'd built another one. He stayed in the one he sold first, made first, built first.
Yeah.
He stayed in there until they got him another one built a little further back, out, going towards, couldn't be coming towards Maginope. He's going back further the other way. And he and Mr. Smith, though, they worked together on that church till they got that done up. I think he was working on one or two houses, you know, small houses. Maybe two bedrooms, dining room, kitchen, and carport and things like that.
I didn't think Martin did much of the work himself. I thought he was pretty busy, you know, just supervising and all.
He done enough till he got down in his back. He had to limp for a while with his back. Had me worried, I was afraid he was going to be a cripple.
Well, was he, could he carpenter like Willie?
Yes, sir.
He's a good carpenter.
Both of them.
Well, where'd they learn that, Mrs. Judy?
Well, working over at the university. Frank and Martin did.
Yeah.
See, Martin learned a whole lot working over at the university, them buildings they were putting up over there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I see. He
a lot of them, that building, school buildings over there. I imagine Martin done a lot of the work on them.
I see.
Well, Frankie worked up there in some part of the university. Buildings on something. That's where they were. They were all working, all three of the younger boys was working up at the university when the father died.
Well, were they? That's right after the war.
Yes. I come home, and Martin, he, as the daddy died, that's how when I, instead of saying Frank, I said daddy. His daddy died in October of 47. Martin married the 23rd, 24th of September, 48. And then he worked around and kept going back to Gainesville, kept going. Mostly, though, they were painters at that time. More painters than there were carpenters. Well, Martin did know a good bit about carpentry. Anyway, they learned all up there on Gainesville. What little they didn't catch up from.
Well, Willie didn't work up there, did he?
No, sir.
Not then.
He was, let me see. He was working down at Edwards' sawmill.
Yeah.
Down that urban.
Yeah.
And then he left there and went over to Archer and went working in some kind of a bomb shell.
Yeah, plant. Bomb factory.
And then when he got his training, where was it?
I don't know.
His training for war, you know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Camp Blandin.
That's
oh,
right,
yeah.
Camp Blandin.
He,
oh, he did. I didn't know that.
Yes, he got his training then, and he was shipped out from there in January of 14. Martin and Ike Nixon, Willie's brother-in-law, Ike Nixon. Went in service in 42. Training, you know. And then 42, I mean.
Yeah, that's right.
42. I get my numbers tumbled up.
I went in then too, Miss.
Yeah, that's when they went. I remember that.
And then Monroe went in 43.
Mm-hmm.
And Frankie went in 44. They're like, oh, that poor young man out from O'Pella to Camp Blandin, sent him back home. Well, he worked over there at this bomb shop, or shell shop, they call it, with Willie till Willie had really had to go in training. They'd been pulling him one way or the other all the time, but finally they called him up saying. And I went to see him one time when I was at Jacksonville. I mean, Daddy went out there and he sent Rosalie. I don't think any of her children went with us. We called Camp Blandin bus, you know, to bring the servicemen back and forth in town. We caught one of them early on Sunday morning. Went out there, going to spend the day. I told them before we ever got to back in Jacksonville. They lived on one side of Jacksonville, and the camp business was all back on the other side. But it was south of Hanging Mountain. But anyway, we had. I had wrote Willie a card telling him we'd be there Sunday. And of course they have to take their chances in getting home too, you know. But he didn't get the card till after he done got his leave to come home.
Oh.
He said, and then it was about time for him to catch his bus out to Archer. No, he didn't get in. They had it in the office there for him. And we went up there, we just knew he was going to be there ready to meet us when that gate was open and let the Camp Blandin bus go in. We got off and I looked down. Oh, I just felt like I'd need a hole to be thrown in and dirt thrown over. All that trouble now.
Yeah.
No way. We went in up to the, they had nice buildings there where they entertained the boys, you know. And went up there and asked if Willie was there. And finally we got to where the head man was to give them the leaves, you know. He looked at Frankie, says, well, Dad, he says, I know you want to see your son mighty bad. He says, but he's done gone home. He says, where do you live at? He says, I live at Flemington, and he lives at Archer. Oh, he says, well, oh, Ed Dugan, that's private Willie Chee, O.W.C. Chee. Wasn't there. Boy, if I could have cried, I'd have cried. I'd have washed Camp Blandin off of the map, I believe. I just got cry. I can't cry, you know. And when my husband died, I bet I didn't wet that thing. I never showed kids enough to wet that paper, napkin. And I'm that way about other close relatives and kin and close friends, you know. The way it does me. Oh, here I go. Get you and it stops. I can't.
Just can't breathe.
I can hardly breathe. See, like my heart's just gonna pop.
What do you think it is, Miss? Is it a chilling cry?
Well, I guess it was from the loss of my mother and seeing her suffer like she did, you know, so long and crying along with her. And then when she did go, it just broke all of our hearts. Rosalind can cry. Rosalie, she can cry just that.
Oh, can she?
Any of them. But me, why? And when I reckon the most and last hard tears I shed was when my little girl died, you know. She died of double pneumonia and measles. And I think that's the last of my big tears.
Your mama lived past your daddy?
No, she died in 1914. And Papa died in
1928. Yeah.
Died on the 4th day of May. 4 o'clock on Sunday morning.
But your mama was sick a long time.
Well, she had some kind. You've heard of this, a lot of people, there's two names for it, or they call it that way. It's pellagra or pellagra. I don't know which one is proper, but I know she died of that, a cause from that.
Yeah. I call it pellagra, but I never heard it. I never was close to it. It's painful.
Yes, and hers taking her on the inside of her body. She said there's a place on her left side here, about as big as a medium-sized orange, but big around. It hurt her, burnt and all, pains. But as for any other pain, any other way, she didn't have. You had to take it to the doctor. She got to have things, but drawing, you know, and she could take it to the doctor, and he said it's for lady. So he went to doctoring her for that. He liked to kill her with arsenic. When she quit going to him and changed doctor, well, he had to go off on a vacation. And when he turned his patients over then to Dr. McCall. And Dr. McCall will get Wilson too, but it wasn't that one, because that was not me. You were better looking doctor than I was a young girl, didn't
you? You noticed.
Listen, you look like he might snap your head off if you didn't do what she
said. Some of them are like that, right?
Well, him and this, I don't know, he's a foreign doctor. And I couldn't understand nothing that man said.
Oh, yes, I know who you mean.
Elliot Williston?
Yes.
He places his words loud enough, plain enough, but I can't understand his language.
Yeah. But now your old Dr. McCall, he changed your medicine?
Mm-hmm. No, sir, still taking the medicine that he
your
was...
Your mama's medicine.
Oh, yes. He examined her, her side. He said, Miss Dixon says, you hurt right there in the side of your stomach. She says, just below my rib. And I told you everything I told. But I didn't forget that, Dr. Singh. I'm kidding. So they carried the medicine in that Mama was taking from this doctor. I'm giving the man that. Makes me mad. I don't think of anything, can't. But anyway, the doctor that was treating her. Mama carried the medicine in and let him sit, you know. Well, she was about out anyway. He says, how long have you been taking this stuff, Mrs. Dixon? She says, ever since I started to predict. Mama says, you're pretty handsome. Great God in heaven. He says, woman's when you ain't done dead. And she says, doctor says, just look at my arms. Long then people wore long sleeves. And she unbuttoned the sleeve, pushed the sleeve. He says, God have mercy on that man. And Mama says, why, God? He says, well, he's just killing you.
Hello.
He says, I remember when you used to come in here for a checkup or anything. He says, and I remember how stout and plump and healthy you looked. He said, but you sure don't look at time. He said, that man just killing you in that medicine, just drying all your blood, taking all of your, what do you call it?
Vitality.
Mm-hmm. Vitality. Images, he says. You just, says, do you don't feel like, he says, no, he says, I don't feel like doing the work. And he give her some medicine. He says, that doctor had you broke out. He says, that's a disease. It should be broken out if it don't start outside. Break it out. So he went taking that bottle of arsenic and another bottle of medicine. He looked at his, well, now this here might have helped. Some, he says, but you need another medicine besides this. Says this arsenic, it's poisonous. It's killing you. So he changed her on to another medicine. And this other medicine, he says, my medicine and this medicine won't work together. He says, so I'm going to change you, give you two different medicines. Oh, we didn't have a phone, but Papa's boss man get out on the orange grove out there on Orange Lake, on Lake Apopka. And
oh, that's when you was...
When we first come to Florida.
Yeah.
And what... Yeah, I can't remember the name of it now, but I always said I'd never forget that name outside of arsenic. I knew I'd remember that because I know it by its looks and scent. And she had to take so many drops of that arsenic with the first doctor, you know. We had we didn't have medicine. I just taken, every time I'd go give her the medicine, I'd wash my hands because, you know, put my finger over the mouth of the bottle and drop. Start off with 3 drops. Next day, 6 drops. And then the next day, 9 drops. And Mama said, that doctor's got your drop mixed up. So when they went back in there, Papa asked him, says, do you mean to every day give my wife 3 drops of that arsenic? Yes. He says, well, you know, 5 days, how many drops would that be, doctor? He called him back. He says, great. No, he says, that is too much, isn't it? So Papa says, that's what I thought. Says, I took somebody that you cured that pellagrium, and they say that, this person said that you didn't give her, you just started off 1 drop a day. All right. 1 drop, 1. I went up next day, 2, and on 3. He says, what have you got against me that you want to kill my wife? And Doc thought Papa was teasing. He says, Doctor, that is a frisky little thing. And Pop says, well, I'm not joking, and I'm not playing. But I want the truth and nothing but the truth. He says, if you don't do something for my wife and get her straightened out, he says, I'm going to turn you to the doctor's office. So I made that threat. He got kind of under the weather. He said he's going to take his vacation. Of course, he knew Mama wouldn't live much longer. Taking it that way. So many drops, you know, every day. And finally, they went in to see him, but he was gone. And Dr. McCall says, well, says, I tell you, Mr. Dixon, says, yeah, that your doctor has turned all of his patients over to me. And he looked at Mama, he says, you haven't got that stuff broke out on you yet. He says, no, but says, you got just the rest of that in that bottle, that woman, and just about put you under the ground. Mama says, well, says, and that doctor comes back, he says, I'm going to tell him something, if I'm living. And Dr. McCall laughs and says, well, we're going to try to get all that out of your system. And, well, she said, just a speck of a guinea egg.
Goodness.
All under her clothes. And people thought she had some contagious disease.
Is she just being poisoned?
That arsenic was poisoning, and he said, that stuff would kill you. So he fixed her up some more medicine, and wasn't about, I reckon, a week, she went back in. A little red spot's coming, it's supposed to break out in joints, you know. And when she went in, he says, well, Miss Dixon, he says, I don't know. He says, I guess you'll have to keep on taking that medicine. He says, but I won't tell you. He says, your skin and your complexion looks better. He says, and I'm glad to say that we've probably got all of that arsenic out of your blood. And she looks an awful pale. She always had a pink, rosy face, you know. And whenever I can't think of your name, but you had to get by the collar and I'd walk ahead with this bottle and get off this coat out of it.
You know, I don't try to remember the names.
I don't either. I can't remember names.
I think that's remarkable. You remember all those names you do. I just call them old Doofunny.
Yeah.
But anyway, checked Mama over. Her blood wasn't as high in a way of what she had, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And these things gonna come out.
Yeah, it's nice outside.
But anyway, she he gave her another supply of medicine. Same kind. And she went back the next week. She was turning red. You know, splotch around. I'm on her jaws up there. Mm-hmm. All around. And the hands and fingers and all. You may elbows, they said, break out. It's a joint. It's a joint disease. She told me, she says, well, Annie Pearl, honey, she says, I guess you and Rosalie will have to do the washing all the way through. I says, well, Mama, you know, we're big enough, old enough, and ugly enough to do it. And that made her laugh, you know. She says, yes, honey, I know you've been at that a long time now. And I wasn't quite 22 at that time, but we get out and get to working. It almost had to battle and stick to Rosalie. That could do.
Oh, you would?
I said, I almost did have to. I said, Mama, I hate to bother you and worry you. I said, that big old fat sister of mine ain't doing a blooming thing but standing there. Such washing, swashing the clothes up and down. Cause Mama.
Just making a mess.
Yeah, getting herself wet, slopping around where I have to stand. Sometimes she'd flop a move and we'd just take me to the side of the head. And I'd grab for her, but she'd run. It wasn't that I couldn't have called her if I wanted to, but I told her one time, I said, all right, if I have to run you down and bring you back here, I'm going to jab you right down in these suds of water. I ain't going to let you get in that wrench water. And my brother Eddie and Maggie were pulling out. Eddie goes and I said, Mama, he says, he called me Big Sister. And I was smaller than Rosalie, but it's old. It's from our own sister. No. Big Sister, Sharon Waldron, should have called me Sister, you know. Then Big Sister and Little Sister. Maggie was the youngest. Mama says, go tell Rosalie to come here. Come on, Rosalie. Mama said to come in there. She said, now listen, you're not helping with that washing, my young lady. She says, but you get that broom, you start on the front porch, you clean it off good. Do you hear me? Yes, ma'am. Come back in the living room, clean it out, sweep the hall. Come in the bedroom, sweep it out, and come on in here and sweep my room out. And sweep it all down through the hall and bring it through that window. Yeah, and scattered everywhere. Where she got to start to sweep. Well, I had to stop to fix Dema. Because at that time, Mama said so much arsenic in her. She had got to her spell and check and she'd be sitting in a chair and you'd see a clump of
teeth.
A lot of times, she didn't want us to know it, you know. Wouldn't be long before. And draw her head right down between her legs. If some of us didn't get that kick. And when she got on that right over this way. She like fell over on the heater there one time. I screamed. Puck heard me scream. He come running in the house. What in the world the matter? What's the matter? I said, Papa, I can't get her up. She likes to fall on that heater. He said, oh my God. Enough trouble in her now with that being burnt. And I've reached over the table, which other people said would have said it was ill manners. She'd have a hot cup of coffee here, and her plate here where she'd be, food would be hotter. I'd be crossed over there. And she'd start, oh, well, you could tell from the looks of the eyes that something was fixing to happen. I said, what's the matter, Mama? A spell's coming on you. She couldn't talk.
Yeah.
And Papa moved the coffee. And he was going to get up and get around there, too, because he could catch her arms and hold them down, you know. Get his head up here on her shoulder and hold her back against the chair. Well, that break that drawing, you see. You could feel her feet come out from under, off the floor up under the table. And we have caught her many and many a time before she hit the floor. Don't seem like the devil bothered her when she was walking or anything like that. The only way she could tell one was coming on was to hurry up and get somewhere and sit down or lay down. I've seen her just draw right up against right of her back on the bed, just she'd draw up just like she was taking exercise, you know? Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. But she could too far over. She wanted to dribble right on over. I said, turn the sunset. And Pop told the doctor that she was under. that the yours like ours, just kind of cranky sometimes.
They won't go the same direction.
Well, ours don't go. It just goes one way, you know. And the breeze just goes so far out.
Yes. So you have to get up to where that breeze lets you.
And sometimes it puts it on me and it gets too cold on me. And I have to fuss with them about putting it up. Mama, Grandma, ain't you cold? Ma, ain't you cold? No. Nope. Ain't you hot? No, you're getting me too cold. And being between the time they brought her home from that, got her broke down. And no, she'd go back every week. Mr. Anderson, Papa's boss man, he was a Swede. He says, there's Dixon. He says, you can take Mrs. Dixon over to the doctor now. And any time that she needs to go to the doctor, just tell me so. Says, me or Rosa one will take her. And, right? Good boss man. And one day, this was before. Well, I was married in 13, and she was taken down with this trouble in 14.
Oh, she didn't have the trouble until after you was married.
No. And I'd quit work and stay home with her because the rest of the children had to go to school. I just about, well, I was too old to go to school without having to pay at that time. You see, after you're 21, you had to go to pay. But I wasn't. I wasn't able to pay my way all through school, so. And the way we had to go, I didn't much care myself whether I finished up or not. We drove a two-horse wagon, lightweight wagon, you know. This man furnished the two horses and the wagon. He had a frame built up like people traveling. And had a cover come up bad weather, just drop the curtains and hook them down. But I didn't like the idea of having to go with all that bunch of young ones and them fussing and chewing. But after he quit driving, Pop had to take his little black mare and little wagon and get a top fixed on it, seats made on the thing. Gad Anderson children, his children, I don't know if I picked up any more or not, but I had to go along, keep them from fussing and fighting over who's going to drive the horse.
Yeah.
So I told them that, Mama had been ailing for a long time. And I told Papa one day, I said, Papa, I'm just going to go to school, finish up this week, and I'm going to bring all my books and things home. I said, you've worked hard to pay for my books. I said, and I'm going to be sure I'm going to keep my books. And Rosalie and Eddie can use them after they get up in that grade. But I quit in the sixth grade. Mama didn't want me to stop. And Mama, you ought to have somebody here to help you. Next thing you know, you'll be down here and you can't do nothing. Mm-hmm. I said, the teachers I have, not as old as I am, and they're just going to push me and all the rest of the young ones around. I said, maybe as old as I am. I said, but she always hated to express my feelings about the teachers. Mama says, why, what's the matter? I said, you're her head and all. No, ma'am, we haven't had no argument. I says, but she tells me to do things for her that I know is wrong, and I'm not going to do it. Mama looked at me and said, "What'd you say?" I said, "She tells me to do things for her that I ain't gonna do." Mom said, "Well, why do you say you ain't gonna do?" I said, "Well, Mama, what other way can I say?" "I don't want to." She said, "Well, that sounds better." I said, "Well, I don't want to, and I ain't going to." She turned off from me. That's where she got answered at. Then I walked off, you know. And I could tell she was right. I was just in a shake all over. And I said, "I'm going to get my books this weekend." I said, "I told Papa was going to quit." I said, "He didn't object." I said, "I don't think you ought to either." And Mama said, "And Papa could hide them cloak closets." And hear how she talks to us children. And some of them, I said, "I'm as old as she is." I said, "And some of the rest of them is not about as old." And so Monday went on, and all the days went on, and all the days went on. I got Pop, Mom couldn't read handwrite, and she couldn't write. She couldn't even write her name until about, I reckon, about a year before she died. Some of the kids learned her how to write Maddie Dixon.
Oh, really?
Maddie Dixon.
And
yeah.
Maddie Hill. And Margaret, that's her name. That was her name, Margaret.
Oh.
And you had to call her Maggie, you know, for short. There's many Margarets in the family around. And so Mama, she says, "Ed, says you think you're doing right?" He says, "Yes, I do." She says, "You ain't learned nothing." And she's the oldest one in her room. Says, "And that she'll be the same teacher, same age, and teacher won't her do or say things to somebody that she knows will get her in trouble." Says, I'm going to write her a nice, clean, and probably write a pretty hand. And he wrote the note to her and explained to her why I was quitting school that weekend, and to be sure and see that I got all my books and everything that belonged to me, and bring them home. And she sat there, I can see her, sat there at that desk, bawl like a baby. I told her, I said, "Miss Earle, I said, you and I can't get along together, and you want me to do things that I know is not right for me to do, not right for you to do." I says, "And besides, my mother's health has got so bad in the last month, too, she's not able to do the work." I says, "I just want my brother, my sister and my brother, my two sisters and brother, to get what maybe I won't get on the rest of their school." I said, "Well, I hate to see you doing it, Pearl. I tried to, could depend on you." I said, "Yes, somebody. I'm quitting." So she goes to the principal, which was a lady principal. And her sister.